Hey, this is Sandra Marcy, and you're listening to the Jazz Spotlight with Jana Lunga.
Episode 65.
Welcome to the Jazz Spotlight, the podcast that gives you the insight and tools you need to be in the music industry today. Artists, authors, and top music industry experts give you actionable tips that will help you promote yourself the smart way. Here's your host, Jan Ilunga.
Hey, what's up, everyone? Jan Ilunga here. This is the Jazz Spotlight Podcast, episode 65. Guys, it's unbelievable. Time is really running. This is already episode 65. I feel like I started a couple of weeks ago, and this is already, 60 plus episodes. Great guests, great topics, amazing tips. And all those ingredients are going to be also part of today's episode. You remember maybe last episode, episode 64, where we talked about how to craft an electronic press kit with Wade Sutton of Rocket to the Stars. And in a way, that episode ties with today's episode, because with Wade on Thursday, we talked about EPKs. So, the features of the EPK, we talked about pictures, how the media can use your EPK, so what you should think about when crafting one. And today we talk about artist management. And we talked about it before on episode 8, but today we talk about it more in depth and more about not only from the manager's perspective, but also from the artist's perspective. So today we're going to hear, things like, what do music managers look at when they're looking for musicians in terms of their presentation, their website, their EPK, their social media? We're going to talk also about places where you can actually find a music manager. So if you feel like you need a music manager, we're going to talk about that. We're going to talk about how you can anyway do some things yourself. And my guest today is British music manager and a friend of the show, Sandra Marcy, and I can't wait to dive into today's content. But before that, a quick reminder, like every episode, you find the show notes with the links to everything Sandra and I talk about at thejetspotlight.com/episode65. Without further ado, here is Artist Management with Sandra Marcy of Marcy Music. Have fun, guys. Hey, everyone. How's it going? I'm here for another great episode of the podcast, and I have a very special guest and friend of the podcast, I should say, because since I started the podcast, I've received tweets and emails of support from my guest, and I'm so very happy to have her on the podcast today. She's an artist manager for a jazz musician, and she's gonna tell us more about the world of artist management, and she also gonna give out some great tips. So guys, if you are out there looking for artist managers, or you are promoting yourself and you're wondering if you're doing it the right way, you're wondering what are artist managers look for in musicians, this episode is for you. It's with great pleasure that I welcome on today's episode, Sandra Marcy. Hey, Sandra, how's it going?
Hey, Jan, I'm good, thanks. How are you?
I'm great. And it's so nice to have you here on the podcast. I know that you have been listening to pretty much every episode or most of the episodes, but it's great to have you as guest today.
Well, thank you for inviting me. It's lovely to be here.
It's my pleasure. So I said about, you're an artist manager for a jazz artist called Theo Jackson, and those especially in the UK probably know who is he, signed to Dot Tam Records, of our friend Andrew Reid, a great artist, really an up-and-coming star in the UK jazz scene. And I obviously, we're going to talk about, your world and, what is it that you do? What is it that artist managers are looking for? But before that, can you tell the listeners a couple of things about yourself and, who is Sandra Marcy?
I wonder that myself sometimes. I started my career in artist management many years ago. I was working in public relations, and I worked alongside artist managers and publicists for some very well-known names. Mm-hmm. And I got to work very closely with some managers and saw what they did and just really, really enjoyed how they managed to guide and shape the careers of their artists. Some years later, when I was in a position to start working for myself and being freelance, I just thought back and thought what I really wanted to do. And having had a long career in publicity, communications and PR, just thought maybe I should give it a try myself. So I called a couple of managers up and got some advice. Mm-hmm. And just started looking around, really. And I've been full time as an artist manager now for 3 years.
Mm-hmm. Okay, and obviously, guys, you know, you will even if you want to know even more about Sandra and, you know, about her services, what is it that she does, you can find also more information on her website, sandramarcy.com. And before this interview, you were telling me something, a big news about your website. So do you want to share it with the listeners?
Yeah, at the moment, my website is so out of date. I spend all the time looking after Theo's site and ignoring my own. But at the beginning of April, I'm going to be bringing up a new site with lots of features. I'm going to start writing again, writing articles to help musicians manage their own careers.
That sounds like a great resource for artists. So, guys, we'll definitely make sure that as soon as Sandra's new website is up and running, you will know about it. I will send out tweets, and also Sandra, for sure, she will send out tweets, and you can follow her on Twitter at PecanGirl, and it's spelled P-E-C-A-N, girl. So you can follow her there to learn more about her website and much, much more, because she doesn't tweet only about her website. She tweets about many other interesting and funny stuff as well. So it's definitely worth follow. Okay, Sandra, the first question, I'm sure many listeners are wondering, especially those who are musicians, is, you know, what is it that managers look for when they're looking for musicians? What are the things you guys look for?
Well, I can only speak for myself, but for me, first and foremost, above everything else, it's all about the music, mm-hmm. Whether it's recorded or whether it's live. I need to feel a passion about the music that I'm hearing, mm-hmm. because I'll be spending so much time with an artist and getting to learn what it is that they want to achieve and listening to their sound and spending a lot of time talking to bookers and promoters and selling that artist and their music. And so therefore I have to believe in it and I have to be passionate about it. And I think a piece of advice I would give to any musician looking for an artist manager is to find somebody who is passionate about what you do. You don't want just any old manager. It's actually better to have no manager. I think your manager has to be passionate about your music and absolutely love what you do and believe in you.
I love it. And yeah, I'm sure that, you know, at least your answer makes a lot of sense, because obviously you as manager, or at least in theory, should be passionate about the music, and you're really, you know, the music should be something that really moves you also emotionally, that really wants you be close to that artist and work closely with him or her, definitely. And in terms of the, you know, the way artists present and promote themselves, so on their website or on social media or during a concert, what are the things that you as artist manager pay attention to?
One of the first things I will do once I found an artist that interests me is go and look at their gigging history on their website. Mm-hmm. That's the first thing I do, is go and see how many shows they're doing, where are they playing, have they been to the same venue more than once? Because if they have, that means they're starting to build relationships with a club owner. It means that also that they're good enough to get rebooked, which is always a good sign. Then after that, then yeah, I do go and have a look at their EPK, their social media. A lot of people pay a lot of attention to the number of followers or the number of fans. And I really don't do that, because social media really isn't a true indication of the number of fans or your ability to pull a crowd at a venue.
Mm-hmm. That's very true.
I know, certainly in the UK anyway, venues like you to have a big online following, but it doesn't necessarily translate to mean that you can pack out an arena.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, no, that's very true. And also, you know, first of all, with social media, we also know that one can simply buy likes on Facebook or even followers on Twitter or views on YouTube. So those numbers, as you said, aren't necessarily indicators of, you know, thousands like equal 1,000 people that would come to a gig. No, definitely. It sounds good. So you really pay attention at the gigging history. So you said, you know, you look at where the artist has performed, how many times. So if he or she has a relationship with the venue. Okay, it's very interesting. And obviously, I'm sure that even though now you're working with Theo, sometimes you maybe look at other artists and, you know, how they promote themselves. So I wanted to kind of ask you if you think there are some promotion mistakes you've seen kind of maybe often that you are maybe surprised by.
Sure. I mean, one of the things that I do is go down and have a look at an artist live, mm-hmm. because that's, you know, a key part of your gigging career. And one of the things that I see a lot of is that an artist doesn't necessarily make the most of their live shows. So for me, a really key thing is connecting with your audience on a much deeper level than from you up on stage. So I always look to see what the artist does when they come off stage, either at halftime or at the end of the show, and see if they just run to the bar or go and run to hang with their friends, or whether or not they actually spend some time connecting with their audience. To me, it's crucial. Your audience has spent maybe 90 minutes connecting with you through your music. Now they want to connect with you as a person. And I feel really passionate that every minute you spend with an audience member one-to-one, talking to them, listening to them, you're winning them over. And they're having an experience that they won't forget. Theo is very much a newcomer on the scene, but I see this, and people get quite giddy when he's approached. You know, they ask him to have their photograph taken with him or for him to sign something, and they get really excited about it because they're in the moment, and that's the key time to capture the attention of your audience, to translate that almost into a sale. And whether that sale means getting an email sign up or whether it means literally selling a CD, it's that time that you spend with your audience after the show that really matters.
Interesting. I like it. And if you guys think about it, you know, it's very true that it's interesting. If we think about pretty much every one of us has been at least to a live concert. So it's interesting to think about what the artists do. You know, after when they are off stage, and it's very true what you talked about, the connecting with the audience at a deeper level. And you mentioned the example of Theo, where maybe he's asked to, you know, has picture taken or, you know, have a quick chat with someone. And yeah, you're so right that if you as an artist connect on a kind of one-on-one level, for the fans, it's going to be an unforgettable experience, and it's definitely going to be someone who wants to sign up for your email list or buy a CD and ask you to sign it, or, you know, give you a shout out on Twitter when they share the pictures. Definitely. No, I like it. I love
sure.
it.
Sorry, I was just going to say, I saw James Taylor in concert recently, and he plays arena tours to thousands. And for the first time ever this year, I saw him at the interval and also at the end of the show, sitting on the side of the stage, signing autographs mm-hmm. and taking photos with the audience. And the intermission was actually about 40 minutes long because he was determined to get through every single person that wanted the photograph taken with him. And so, you know, even at that level of fame. Somebody took the time to connect one-on-one, and you know, you'd have your photograph taken with somebody famous like that. Sure, you're going to put it on your Facebook page and share it with your friends, and they're going to think, oh, what a cool guy he is. He took the time to do that. And it's about that reputation building, and it's about that public relations side. That's how you present yourself to the public. It's absolutely crucial.
Yeah, that couldn't be more true. I totally agree with that. And obviously, we have talked a little bit, you know, about what you as artist manager look for. You gave out already some tips in terms of, you know, how to get the most out of your live performance. But what about the place? So where can musicians look for artist managers? Do you have some places to suggest? And maybe do you have also something to say in terms of what to look for in an artist manager?
Yep, sure. The largest body of music managers in the world is an organization called the Music Managers Forum. And these are it's a great organization with some very influential managers on board, with, you know, managers of world famous artists. And they provide this great network for new young managers. And I highly recommend that a musician, when they're looking at managers, that they consider someone who is a member of the Music Managers Forum, because it shows that that manager is committed to their own development and is committed to continuing to learn. And also it means that that manager has access to advice from other senior managers, because it's a great little forum. It's like a little supportive network that we can, you know, me as a new manager, I can go and ask a very established manager, look, I've got this problem, how do I handle it? And he can give me some, or he or she can give me some advice. And so the Music Managers Forum is a really good indication that a manager is serious.
Okay, I like it. And guys, like always, every episode, you find the links to everything Sandra and I talk about in this episode in the show notes, so including the link to the Music Managers Forum. I like it. It's very interesting. And when, you know, obviously, everyone has different needs and different goals, and there are so many artist managers out there. So it's kind of, it can be difficult to choose one or, you know, instead of the other. But what do you think are the kind of key things that artists should really look for when, you know, when they want to hire an artist manager?
Sure. It's interesting because I started, I think, this episode talking about passion. And I think that's really what I would say to a musician, is find someone who's passionate about what you do first and foremost. A lot of people think that they should go to a management agency or to a very experienced manager. That certainly works for some artists. It really depends on how much time you need to spend with your manager.
Mm-hmm.
And that can change according to the stage of your career that you're at. So, for example, if you wanted to be able to call your manager every day, then you probably shouldn't be looking at a management agency, because they just won't have the time to take the call. The other thing is that managers don't necessarily have to be very experienced. If you're at the start of your career and you have time to allow a manager to learn and grow with you, which is what happened to me, then actually that can sometimes benefit you. I know somebody who left, a jazz musician who left a management agency over here, and then decided to give the management responsibility to his cousin.
Okay.
And his cousin didn't know anything about it. So, of course, I reached out and I said, look, if you need any help, just call me anytime. Just the little bit that I know I could share. And they're doing great because they have a good working relationship. They trust each other. And really, that is one of the key things, along with passion, is you have to be able to trust your manager, to trust that they are doing the right thing for you, that they're representing you in the correct way. And that they they have your best interests at heart. So don't always think that you have to go to like a really established manager, because apart from anything else, they're probably going to be a bit too busy. And sometimes, you can just look a little bit closer to home. And if you have the time in your career to allow someone to grow with you, then that's can possibly be one of the best artist manager relationships.
Amen. it's very true what you said. I really agree with you, and I think that those two elements that you mentioned are probably those elements that even though everyone has different goals and needs, but so finding someone who's passionate about your music and someone who's trustworthy are definitely the two kind of must-haves, if we can say so, for artist managers. So any musician out there looking for an artist manager, listen to what Sandra Marcy has to share with us here on the podcast, because so far she has given out already some very valuable and really spontaneous and useful tips on the world of artist management. I'm loving this. And obviously I know that those who are listening and who are musicians also want to know, want to have some tips from an artist manager in terms of promotion and tools. But before we talk about those tools, I want to ask you about the mistakes when approaching, for example, artist managers or management agencies, because we were talking with you before this interview about how sometimes you and I get similar kind of emails that are really out of context, and they really show that the artist or the person who sent the email didn't spend 10 seconds of his time or her time to do a research about you or about me. So what I want to ask you is this: what do you think are the kind of common mistakes that artists make when approaching trying to approach artist managers and management agencies?
Sure, I think I've got three that I, mm-hmm. I made a note of. And yeah, certainly the first one is research. Look at who you're approaching. I've been approached by a classical quartet. I've been approached by an opera singer. I've mm-hmm. been approached by a heavy metal band, indie singer-songwriters. And yet my profile everywhere states that I work in jazz. So it's not that I don't like the music. It's just that I don't have the contacts to work with that person. Mm-hmm. But it's one of the things that, like we were saying before we started recording, if somebody sends me an email and I'm BCC'd in on it, then I know it's not a personal approach. Mm-hmm. And if they don't have the time to do the research and to write me a personal email, then why should I spend my time replying to them? Because I get dozens a week.
Mm-hmm. No, yeah, it's very true. And also, especially when you see that, you read that first two sentences and you see that it's out of context, which means that the person didn't spend 5 seconds to research who Sandra Marcy actually is and what she does, in which genre she's involved. No, yeah.
That's the first one. The second one for me is not understanding the difference between an agent and a manager. And I get asked this an awful lot. A lot of artists come to me because they want a manager, and mm-hmm. I have a chat with them. And after I've explained to them what a manager actually does, they go, "Oh no, I want a booking agent." So, okay, there is a difference here. So basically, booking agents book your gigs. They issue contracts. They get you paid. They get you on the road and in front of an audience. What a manager does is they don't necessarily act as your booking agent. They can do, but they don't necessarily. A manager's job really is to work with you to set goals over a period of years and manage all the aspects of your career to help you work towards those goals, mm-hmm. and to change them as and when, because everything changes, to change those goals as your career develops. And that's really what a manager's job is. It's to manage the career, not necessarily to be the publicist or the booker. It's much more of an overarching approach. Mm-hmm. So that's the second one. The third one, is approaching a manager or a management agency before you really need one. You probably actually need a booker before you need a manager. And you only really need a booker when you can actually book yourself. It's a funny business, this one. But booking agents won't take you on unless you have a solid gigging history. So you've got to say to yourself, if I have a good gigging history and I can get gigs myself, why do I need a booking agent?
Mm-hmm.
Which is true. Now, booking agents, what they can do is they can open doors for you to bigger venues and better venues and put better tours together. But in terms of what a manager does, really, I know some fantastically successful self-managed musicians. And the truth, certainly here in the UK, every once in a while I do a quick count up to see how many jazz managers there are.
Mm-hmm.
I don't know how many jazz musicians there are, but there's quite a few. But in terms of managers, I think we just about get into double figures. It's just around 10 or 12.
Okay.
Not very many. So, you know, your career, you really need to have an idea of what you want to achieve over a longer term. And that's something that a manager will look at when they first meet you or approach you, is to see how long a vision you have for your career. You know, if a musician comes to me and they're talking about what they want to do the year after next, and I say, you know, literally, where are you headed? What do you want to do in 5 years' time? And they can't answer it, then it's too soon for them to be seeking management.
Love it. I love it. So to recap, number kind of common mistakes, the three common mistakes you see artists make when they approach you, or maybe they approach management agencies. So they don't do research. So you state everywhere that you're a jazz artist manager and you've been, as you told us, contacted by pretty much everyone in other genres. And then number two, not understanding the difference between what actually an artist manager is and does and what a booking agent is and does. And then the third aspect, what you just told us, that maybe when it's like trying to hire a manager too soon, so not kind of having spent the time thinking about your career and setting long-term goals. So I really like especially this third point that you mentioned, because I also see it, for example, on Twitter, and I'm connected with you. And again, you can follow Sandra at Pecan Girl. And again, Pecan is spelled P-E-C-A-N and then girl. And I see often there are some management agencies where, you know, they are kind of, they are contacted by artists via Twitter looking for managers. And I'm pretty sure that some of those artists are making this third kind of mistake, that they haven't really thought about their career, you know, long term. So what they want to be next year, in 5 years, and so forth. I really like those three mistakes. I hope, guys, that if you are making one of those or even all of those after listening to Sandra and I, it's gonna help you in a positive way. All right, let's talk for a moment about tools, because you know we are here in a new year, and by the way, happy new year. We are here in a new year, and again I mentioned that you're very active online, so I'm sure you see a lot of artists promoting themselves, you know, or on the website and, you know, Facebook, Twitter, Instagram, whatever. And I want to ask you, what do you think are the kind of must-have promotional tools for 2015? I mean, if I'm a musician in 2015, what do you think are the tools I can't be without to promote myself?
Okay, I've got three here for you, right?
Mm-hmm.
Are you ready for the first one?
Yep.
It's the phone.
Mm-hmm.
It's not online. It's talking to somebody and building a relationship with somebody personally, and being honest with them, and starting to build a working relationship with someone.
Mm-hmm.
So if you manage to get, for example, you're hunting for gigs and you manage to get a promoter on the phone, but the first thing to do is ask them if it's convenient, if they have 2 minutes to talk to you.
Mm-hmm.
And if they say yes, then make sure you only take 2 minutes. But really, I do an awful lot of work on the phone. And it is, this industry is about connections. It's about, you know, getting to know people, getting to meet people and being genuine with them. Always look to see if you can help somebody before you ask for something for yourself. It's like, you know, just be genuine and be nice. Mm-hmm. Don't be the kind of musician that just calls when they want something. I've had a few of those and they're kind of, I don't take their calls anymore.
Sorry, guys.
So that's the first promotional tool. It sounds so old fashioned, but it's so true because it's a difficult business for anyone to make a living in, whether you're an agent or a manager or a musician, mm-hmm. Or a venue. So, you know, we all need to work together and support each other. And I've made some fantastic working relationships in the last 3 years. And I spend a lot of time doing that. And, you know, it can be years before I actually ask for anything in return. So watch out. The second one is your email list. Now, I know you've had a podcast on email lists, but so I'm not going to attempt to cover it in anywhere near as much depth or as well as that other podcast has done. But really, it's in sales. There's a saying in sales that it's easier to sell to a customer you already have than to find a new one. And that is certainly the case with your email list. Those guys have already signed up to hear from you. They want to hear from you. So let them hear from you. it's that whole, you can use your email list to generate that whole 1,000 true fans approach. I don't know if any musicians out there have heard of this, but the idea is that you can actually have a sustainable living with 1,000 fans. And they just need to be fans who will do anything to see you. They will drive 200 miles to go to your gig. They'll pre-order your album. They'll tell their friends about it. They'll bring their friends to your shows. They'll buy the t-shirt. They'll buy the mug. They'll do anything that you ask them to do. And the theory is that if you have 1,000 of those guys, you don't need anyone else. No musician is ever going to reach everybody with their music. You don't need to reach everybody. You just need to reach enough.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Your email list really is the place that you can do that, because those email, behind every one of those email addresses is a person, and you've either met them or they've seen you at a live show or they visited your website and gave you their email address voluntarily. So, you know, make the most of it. The third one. It is. There is social and online. Your website needs to be up to date. Yeah, I know that goes without saying, but I was approached yesterday by a band and I looked at their gigging dates as the first thing to look at. And the last lot of dates they had were in 2013. So it doesn't kind of really look very good. Maybe they'd done a world tour and they were too busy to put them on their website. I don't know. But, you know, it's such a simple thing. The other thing I'm going to say about websites is make sure that they are mobile friendly. Mm-hmm. 80% of web traffic comes now from a mobile device, whether it's a phone or a tablet. So to have a website that doesn't show on those devices, it just doesn't make sense. So anybody out there with a flash site, go get it fixed now. The thing about social media, I mean, social media is great, and I've met some amazing people, yourself included. I've found some fantastic music, and I've made some really good friendships. And in actual fact, it's how I met my own artist, was through social media. But it comes and goes. You know, they could switch off the lights at Facebook Towers next week. Mm-hmm. You know, they could turn off Twitter or Instagram, and you've lost everybody, all those people that we're hearing from you are just gone. So you have to spend the most time driving traffic to the one thing that you can control, which is your website mm-hmm. and your email address. You know, you have complete control over your own website. Or at least I hope you do. and if you don't, you need to. in terms of what social tools you use to connect with people, I think the key thing, and I advise every musician to do this, is to think about the ones they're most comfortable with. So, for example, if you've got a really clever way with words and you're quite witty, then Twitter might be great for you. If you have a really good eye for taking photographs, then Instagram's the one for you. And it just depends. It just depends what suits you the best. I started out as an Instagram user, and as anybody who knows me well will tell you, I'm not the best in the world taking photographs. I have many, many blurred photographs of Theo at his gigs, and he can tell you that's true. So why on earth would I then choose a platform that relies on photos? It doesn't make sense. So I close that account down because it doesn't fit my ability. Mm-hmm. So instead concentrate on Twitter because it's immediate and because I get engagement and it's not all about business. Sometimes it's about the weather or my cats. And it's about engagement and having a conversation still. So I think that's the thing to do is to look at which platforms suit you the most and then make sure that you have a presence on them. The one exception to that is YouTube. Everybody must have a YouTube channel. Mm-hmm. And before you go and look for mine, no, I don't have one. YouTube is the biggest search engine. People, when they're looking for music, go to YouTube first. So to not have a YouTube presence of any description for a musician doesn't make sense. So whatever channels you choose. So let's say you end up with thinking, okay, you're going to have a website, you're going to have a YouTube channel and a Twitter profile. And you're just going to concentrate your efforts on those three. Mm-hmm. Because it's better to concentrate your efforts on three things and do them well than spread yourself across every possible platform you can and then either not keep them up to date or forget what the password is or just not be able to keep on top of them, because to do something well does require time. But once you've decided what your channels are that you're happy using, then make sure that you brand yourself so that you're recognizable. Make mm-hmm. it so that the wallpaper on your website is the same as the wallpaper on your Twitter account and on your YouTube banner. Use the same photograph of yourself, whether it's on your Facebook page and your Twitter account. The aim for that is to, I hate the word brand yourself. I don't like that. but it is about identity. It's about somebody hitting a page and in that split second, knowing that it's you that they've got. Mm-hmm. Anybody looking for an image of me online will see that there is only one. Mm-hmm. and it's consistent. It's on my Skype profile. It's on my Twitter profile. It's on my personal and my professional Facebook pages. It's on my LinkedIn account. It's the only image of me online. And that way people know. And as a result of it, for anyone that hasn't seen the image, it's a silly one of me laughing with my hands in front of my face. And I was at a venue in December, and I'd arranged to meet a business contact there. And I thought I spotted him in the room, and I wasn't quite sure. So I caught his eye, and I put my hands in front of my face, and he went, "Sandra." So that's the power of branding yourself. It sounds crazy. But it works.
I love it. Guys, you should do the same. Hey, make sure to look at Sandra's picture and do something similar, not necessarily with the hands in front of your face, but do something that, it will make you stand out from the crowd. No, but seriously, though, you have given out so many great tips. So you told us about the kind of what you consider the must-haves. So you talked about the importance still of offline communication. So, with the phone to actually talk. And then you talked about the importance of our email list. So obviously something we talked about a lot before in the past. And you're so right that it's still a very important tool. And when you talked about the social media and they could go tomorrow, they will just, be turned off or shut down. But if you have an email list, you have all those people there and you're not going to lose them. And then you talked about the importance of having a website that it's updated, that it's mobile friendly, responsive, definitely. And then when you talked about choosing, you know, the platform that suits you the most, I couldn't agree more. And you mentioned YouTube as kind of the must have. And in case you don't have a YouTube channel yet, or you have one, but you want to make sure you know that everything is okay, or maybe you want to do some changes, I recommend after this episode that you check out episode 63, where we talked about how to run a YouTube channel with Sherry Collard. So she told pretty much everything there is to know about getting started with a YouTube channel, and you know what to think about when starting one, and also how to monetize with a YouTube channel. So yeah, you can monetize through YouTube. So if you have a YouTube channel, but you're not using it as a source of income, remember that you could turn it into an income stream. So maybe you're not gonna pay all of your bills through YouTube, but you could still make some income through that. And really, Sandra, I want to thank you, you know, once again for this fun episode, for being here on the podcast, and for your great advice. And, you know, I'm really looking forward to the new version of your website, you said in the beginning of April, right?
Yes, indeed. I'd like to thank you, Jan, for inviting me on the show. It's been a lot of fun. And I just love what you're doing with the Jazz Spotlight. It's what I actually set out to do myself and failed miserably. So thank you so much for getting out there and creating some great content for musicians. And I'm certainly going to go and check out that YouTube podcast that you've done. So there's one last thing I'd like to mention, that is, if you do decide to manage your own career, and I hope you do, I'd really recommend that you get hold of a copy of something called the Music Management Bible. You can find it on Amazon. It's compiled and edited by Nicola Riches for the MMF, the Music Managers Forum. Look out for the one that says new edition on the cover, because it's been updated. And if you read through it, you will understand then the work of a manager, everything from booking tours to licensing music to recording contracts. It will just give you a brief overview, and you can use it to help start managing your own career. So don't wait for a manager to find you. Go and do it yourself.
I'd like to close by saying a last message to any musicians listening to this, which is to say there's absolutely nothing wrong in being a self-managed musician. There is no reason why you can't do it yourself. I know a lovely lady over here in the UK. She tours constantly. She self-releases her own records. She runs her own festival. She doesn't have a manager.
Whoa, okay. And what's her name, so that people can check her out and maybe learn something from the way she she does things?
The lovely lady is called Georgia Mancho.
Mm-hmm. I know her. Yeah, I know her through Twitter. Yeah, yeah.
Yeah, and Georgia runs the Revoice Festival.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah, in London.
Last year, she had a crazy tour of like 35 or 40 dates all over the UK. And she, how this lady even sleeps at night, I have no idea. but I have a huge respect for her, because she manages every aspect of her own career.
I'll definitely have to reach out to Georgia again, and I'll have to ask her to be on the podcast soon so we can learn more about her. But first and foremost, Sandra, I want to thank you for, number one, for your support of the Jazz Spotlight. You've been incredible, and obviously for the great things you do for the jazz community, and, you know, for this fun and filled with actionable tips, this interview. Thank you again, Sandra.
Thanks, Jan.
Alrighty, we are back. That was fun. Sandra, thank you so much for the interview and for your great tips. I'm sure that many listeners are gonna really benefit. And thank you also for kind of opening our eyes more on the world of artist management. You shared some great insight on that, you know, what music managers do, what they look for in artists, and much more. So thank you again, Sandra. A big shout out to you. Okay, guys, we are at the beginning of February, so if you're a jazz fan and if you're a Jazz Spotlight fan, then you know that every month at the beginning of the month, I publish a new jazz festivals guide where I mention the jazz festivals happening in that month all over the world. So if you want to find February's one, just go to thejazzspotlight.com/February15. That's thejazzspotlight.com/February15, so you find it there. And before I say goodbye to you, I want to give you a sneak peek on Thursday's episode. On Thursday, we talk about how you can get your fans support for your next project. So let's say you're about to release an album, you're planning a new album release, you want to make your fans part of that experience, you want to get their support, maybe also some funding from your fan base, and you're wondering how you can do that. Well, guess what? We're going to talk about that on Thursday. I'm Yanni Lunga. Like always, this is the Jazz Spotlight Podcast. Thank you so very much to all the Twitter fans who are really showing their support with great tweets. Guys, you always make my day. Thank you so much for the outpouring support that I've been seeing on Twitter. Thank you again, guys. Alrighty, that's it for today. Thanks again for tuning in, and I'll talk to you on Thursday. Have a great day.